we'll have questions at the end, Liz, right?
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
So we're missing one now, Liz, so we'll have lots of time for Q&A for you guys. And I think these guys have both have such interesting education and career experiences, although they're both very new to the profession. I thought you guys would really appreciate their perspective. So I'm going to introduce the two panelists. Erica Lee Nelson is a data indexer at the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation. Her background is that she has a BA in American Studies and Education from Wellesley, which she received in 2006. She worked in school libraries in Boston and Seattle until 2010, when she started the MLIS program at the high school. While at UW, she worked at the Applied Physics Labs Library, and for her Capstone project, she helped build the taxonomy and control vocabulary for a digital library aimed at fostering conversations about education and technology between parents and teachers. She graduated from the iSchool in 2012 and is now a data indexer at the Institute of Health Metrics and Evaluation, where she catalogs and indexes public health data sets. Erica's also been learning Russian, in part to better catalog, and in part to better communicate with her future grandmother-in-law. So welcome. Thank you. I'll go ahead and introduce Patrick to you, and we can make this more like an informal conversation, Q&A thing, instead of doing like a one person at a time thing. Patrick Machina is a taxonomist and browse developer at Amazon. Born and raised in Honolulu, he received his BA in Japanese literature in 2009 from the University of Washington. He's a 2012 graduate of the University of Washington MLIS online program. And while in the program, he worked in a wide range of organizations, including the City of Portland Archives, the San Francisco Zen Center, and KEXP. Yay! Yeah. He's currently a taxonomist and a browse developer at Amazon, where he started work in late February. So these people are very recent graduates. His interests include the history of court categorization and information science, playing basketball, and studying Spanish and Japanese. So welcome, Patrick, and thank you both so much for showing up.
I know you can project.
Do you want to go ahead and start, Erica?
Sure.
Okay.
So,
hi everyone.
So, I am a data indexer at the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, which is, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, it's a public health research organization. It's part of UW. I think we're part of the School of Public Health. I'm not entirely sure how that works, but we're part of UW. We're over in Belltown. And one of the major projects at IHME is the Global Health Data Exchange, which is basically it's a catalog of public health data sets from every country in the world. We do a lot of research with a lot of data sets and have lots and lots and lots of data points from everywhere. And at some point it became very clear that the researchers were not doing a great job of organizing all of that information, and like I was talking about, the findability of the data sets that we have versus the ones that are available versus the new ones versus the versions and who did we get it from was getting overwhelming. So they started a catalog of public health data sets, and the data indexers are basically the people who maintain and add to and grow the catalog. We each have a region of the world that we own, and we become specialists in that region. My region is interesting. So I have Eastern Europe and Central Asia, mostly. It gets a little bit complicated, but that is why I'm learning Russian and getting to use that for when I eventually get to the former Russian or the former Soviet countries regions. I we'll hopefully get to use the rental skills, which is one of those things where they said, hey, do you want to learn a language? Yes, yes, I want to learn a language, thanks. So luckily, in an organization that has so much data, we don't actually get to have to touch the data very much. We're really interested in the metadata. So we really want to know, what kind of data is it? Is it a survey, a registry, a report? What's the data granularity? Do we have microdata? Do we just have tabulations? What is the geographic coverage? What is the time coverage? All of these pieces of information that the data, the researchers kind of want to know, really want to know at certain times. We want to know all the time, and we get to do the research with whatever we have to try and find out that's, try and find the information that we can put into the catalog. We keyword the data sets. In addition to the cataloging, we also get to index. So we have a taxonomy of about 700 keywords that we are trying to keep to about 700, but it grows all the time. And it's kind of great. I find myself walking around and keywording my life. So when my cat scratches my boyfriend, it's an animal injury. There we go. And it means that I have far more knowledge of causes of death and ways of coding causes of death and risk factors than I ever thought I'd have. I still really don't understand covariates, but that's okay. I'm not a statistician. I don't need to know those things. But how did I get here when I have no background in public health? I'm an American studies major and education background, and never expected to be working this closely with public health data sets or any of this sort of realm. But I've always kind of been in not quite traditional libraries. When I was at Wellesley, I worked in the music library, so it was a very small and specialized library. I loved it. I worked in school libraries in Boston and here in Seattle. I worked in the physics library, where I got to work with a lot of researchers, so that was a really great experience moving into IHME. They all kind of looked like libraries, and I really enjoyed a lot of it, but it wasn't quite what I wanted to be doing. So when I was at the iSchool and trying to kind of figure out what I like to do, I really didn't know, and that made it very difficult to say, I want to do this job, because I didn't know how to describe for myself what it was that I wanted to do, what I was interested in. I took the knowledge organization classes and loved it. All I wanted to do was catalog and index and create vocabularies, work with vocabularies. And for my capstone, I worked with a company that was starting an online library for parents and teachers to talk about technology and education and games and education. And worked a lot with the content and how do we describe that content, and how can we make that findable for parents and teachers who are coming from very different backgrounds to talk about the same thing. So I found that really, really interesting. But I still didn't really know how that could be a job that I could talk myself into. And so I just looked a lot at a lot of the job posting websites that Deb posted, and looked for as many different kind of words and terms that made sense to me. And at some point, I happened to be on UW Hires, and there was a job for a data indexer. And I said, ooh, data indexer, I can do that, maybe, kind of. And as I read the job description, it was very clear that it was about looking at finding and describing the context of these public health data sets. And that was what I found that was really interesting for me. So when I talked with with my employers, future employers, interview and in my cover letter, that was the point that I found that was really something that I could talk about. How can we describe these data sets? Because it's so, when you're looking at data, you need to be able to understand how it was. How did we get this data? Where did it come from? What time? Who did this? What was their story? Why is it, does it have, is it objective? Does it, was it taken from a certain perspective? All of these things are really important for being able to use data and make sense of it. And that was what I really loved. So I got to talk about that a lot and ended up getting the job. And it's really been a perfect experience. And luckily, a lot of, there are 7 data indexers now, and 5 of us started at about the same time. So we were all learning at the same time, which has been fabulous. I've been there since September, and feel like I'm still learning every day new things and getting new projects. And last week, my region is Eastern Europe and Central Asia. I've mostly been working in India. And my boss said, hey, what do you know about Indonesia? We're going to Indonesia in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and we need to know everything that we have, everything that we need, and all of, you know, laundry list of all of the different things that we're looking for, but we don't know what any of these surveys have. We need it by tomorrow. Huh, okay, it's all in Indonesian. I don't know Indonesian. It's kind of like Dutch. That was very cool. I went to the Netherlands as part of the program. So, it's... I really enjoy that there is something new every day, and there's something that I can have this piece that I really, really enjoy learning about the context and learning about how to describe things, but every day is there are new things to learn. And taking advantage of, you know, I don't know Indonesian, but I'm going to learn some Indonesian. So I now know about 5 words that are not useful, unless you're looking at mortality. But I can help with that. Household mortality, very good. So it's really been a great place to be, and a place that definitely needs and uses information professionals every day. The data team, like I said, we have 7 data indexers. We have a visualization specialist, because once you have all of this data, you need to be able to figure out how to show it to people that are not just other researchers and not just statisticians and economists. And so a lot of what IHME has been doing in the last several months is figuring out new and different ways to visualize these things. So if you look up GBD Compare, it's a lot of fun to play with numbers, and you can do a lot of visualization live. It's very cool. And let's see what else. One of the other things that has been very clear is we're looking at this big project for global burden of disease that the IHME has been working on for the past 5 years. We just released in December, and we're now going to be doing this more or less ongoing. So it used to take 5 years to get all of this data together. We're now going to be doing it all the time, which is a huge undertaking. But it means that we also want to try and be transparent about where the data is coming from. So we need the researchers to keep track of where the data they're using comes from. And they're not so good at that. We are. So we're doing a lot to build the structure and build this process and build the processes and build the system that will make it so that rather than having to spend weeks and weeks and weeks going through input sheets and trying to figure out where different data points came from different data sets, all I need to do is hit a button and a citation list will come out. Mm-hmm. We're still several steps away from that, but we're getting there. And it's really exciting to be on a team and in an organization that really recognizes that we're important and we're adding a lot of value to very valuable data, but there are several more levels of value that need to be added for it to maximize its potential. So that's worth it.
Awesome.
I don't know if we want to do questions now or later.
Maybe Patrick could talk for a while and then take questions.
So, hi, my name is Patrick Machina. I just want to say thank you to SLA for having me. Thank you to Liz for being the middle person. Your time and my name was applied too fast. But, anyway, my name is Patrick. I'm currently the taxonomist browser developer at Amazon. It's been almost 2 months now. I graduated in the whole 12 of the summer quarter. And, currently at Amazon, I work in the Kindle department. So we create terms and categories in the front end and back end as well. Although we do work in other departments, soft lines, hard lines, other marketplaces, UK, China, so forth. Let's see. Oh, I was in the online program for the LIS, so supposedly it's supposed to take us 3 years, and I pushed it forward and did it 2.25. Couldn't fit it all in 2 quarters. Let's see. Yeah, that's about it. I know you guys are here to find a job outside of the library world, is that right? So I'd like to talk about my experience in the LIS program. I guess what I did to ensure I got a job after I graduated. I would recommend taking INFX classes. I think they're great to build practical skills that you can use in libraries, special libraries, archives, or in corporations as well. Let's see. I did a lot of internships. And I think that was one of the few benefits of being online is that you have extra time to work full-time or do internships. So I started, I was in Portland when I started the program. So I was at the City of Portland Archives. Let's see. This small museum called Bernanke Alexis Center, which is dedicated to the history of Japanese Americans in the Portland community. And so after the first year, I moved back to Seattle. And there I was at KXP, the Burke Museum, and a small contract job with John Musser, who is the founder of Programmable Web. And let's see. Oh yeah, so that's one of the benefits of the online program. Let's see. I think Dan, you mentioned about how getting an LIS degree opens up a diversity of opportunities, which is totally correct. I worked in archives, a Zen Center with Cheryl, actually. A radio station, KXP. You don't know it, but they all need information professionals. I think it's just about looking up your favorite company, your favorite store, and seeing if they have any listings or past interns that serve in some kind of information professional role. And so I had no idea KXP was hiring for that, although they've been hiring for an information specialist opening for a few years now. So companies do need information professionals. Let's see. I also want to talk about your quote, Deb, that you said, don't think you're ever too busy. Totally true as well. You can always fit stuff into your schedule. If you can, you might have to give up some stuff. Like for me, there are times when I have to eat like 2 eggs and toast for breakfast and dinner, but there are ways, the point is there are ways to like fit another opening into your schedule. It's hard to think about this, but then when you apply for an internship, one, you have to apply for it. Two, there are internships that they'll turn you down because there are 10 other people applying for that one internship, which is pretty absurd, but this is the market that we live in. This is the market that we want to work in. And so, that's what you jump into. What it comes down to is your experience, and just building up those skills that you have on your resume. Let's see. Oh yeah, so I want to go back to talking about classes real quick. So the classes I found most helpful, were the mid-data class, INFX 531, is that right? The source construction with Trent Health, LIS 537. The two database classes. I know Amazon requires you to know a little bit about Boolean operators, be able to create some simple query logic. So take those classes. My IA class with Samantha Starmer. I think that's only offered in the summer. I'm not sure it's still offered. Is it?
Yeah.
Great. That was a 1 week seminar, basically. It was really intense, but worth it. If you like information architecture, take the class. Study abroad. I think it's hard to see information professionals outside of the library, but then, as we all know, there are a lot of a lot of companies that do need them, need us. And so, yeah, I studied by the Zen Center, but I know there's like a program that you go to Ghana, is that right? Yeah, so those are, I have a couple friends who went on that, so great opportunities. And a Kellogg. I took that class as well. It's not the end of the world if you don't take it, but then I highly recommend it. I don't know if you're on LinkedIn today, but there's an article that's saying like 80% of all spreadsheets have errors. So there you go. If it's just to learn how to look at your screen for 3 hours or something. do you have any questions for us?
How are you learning Spanish?
Duolingo?
Yeah.
It's an app. It's pretty cool.
Duolingo. It's free, and it has a course book, and it's awesome. Yeah. Does someone else have Duo, like D-O, D-U-O, and then Lingo.
I have a question for Patrick.
Yes.
So where did you find your job? You heard how you looked down on UW.
Oh,
Amazon job.
I found it online.
What website did you find it?
Amazon.com. It's a company that I've always wanted to work for. But then I applied to that same position 4 times.
Okay.
The last time I applied for a recruiter, whom I met at the InfoCamp conference, the UN conference or something. So I think that was my way in.
So you persevered.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Do you have a mentor or a predecessor, either of you, in your positions, or are you kind of newly created?
Let's see. Kind of, yeah. So I was part of, they hired 5 of us at once, but kind of 6 of us at once. So we went from basically 1 data indexer to 7 data indexers very, very quickly. So the data indexer who has been there for several years now is kind of our mentor, only because she understands so much more than we do. and she's been really great and very patient in kind of making sure that, it is very much a cataloging position. Like there is a lot of cataloging and looking at understanding data sets from different directions. So you do kind of need a mindset that is looking at kind of, they can all blend together, but everyone is its own unique thing that has different, so many different components and can have so many different ways. Like, we had a lot of data sets, not the reports or the data files or the questionnaires or all of the different things that are part of this data set. Those are just part of it. So it does require a very different approach, and it's been so helpful to have someone who's been there for several years to understand that. She also comes from a more archiving background, so she understands kind of the collection aspect of it. One of our other data indexers has a research background, which has also been really helpful because many of us we all have MLIS degrees, but we don't all have research backgrounds. So jumping into not only public health, which is its own huge thing, and public health research, which means you need to understand research methods, like the class in the Netherlands, I never thought I would appreciate so much. The research methods class, just understanding what goes into how is a questionnaire constructed? What is sampling? What is representativeness? Because, sure, something's representative or it's not. I don't really care. Ooh, they really care. They really need to know. So when, our patrons, not patrons, but the people that we are working for really, really care. So being able to understand what those stakeholders really need to know really helps. So I think that's been super helpful having them as mentors.
Sure.
I do have a mentor at work. He's the person I go to if I have some like simple question. A question that I might embarrass myself if I ask my boss or something. Where's the bathroom? But I find it equally important to find a mentor when you're in school. I kind of saw Joe Tennis as my mentor. He was more like a mentor slash role model. I think he does great work in like in the field of like history of ontologies.
Joe
Tennis.
Tennis. Okay.
And so just like just observing his like work, reading his papers, it's, you know, that dedication to the field. It's always great. It's always inspiring. It makes you motivated. And this is gonna sound really weird, but I looked at Twitter a lot. There are great professionals on Twitter. And yeah, a lot of times they'll like retweet like an article, a paper. You kind of get into the mindset of like how you're supposed to think when you follow the Twitter handle. And it's a good way for you to think of your field as like, it's never ending. This is who you are. Always be, what do you call it? Always be within your field 24/7. Because this is going to be your life. This is your passion. I hope it is. And it's just great to see people who are established having conversations about, the information architecture, the architecture metaphor, whether if it's appropriate or not, and they're arguing back and forth on Twitter. It's great to observe that, you know? But it's, and so you may be only following them, but I found a lot of knowledge on that site.
Fantastic. I have kind of a follow-up question to that. You said you went to InfoCamp, which is where you connected with the recruiter. Had you been to InfoCamp before?
No, that was my first time, all 12.
Have you done meetups before?
No.
I've been told that they're a good way to get engaged with that community, and I have not previously been investigating taxonomy, information architecture, and such things, but it seems to be... I guess I just wonder how it helped you, how did you like that InfoCamp? You were the only one.
Yeah, the InfoCamp was great. I actually presented identifying flaws in navigation structures. That was based on my internship at Burke Museum when I was an IA intern. But I do know that meetups are really great too, to meet people, to meet professionals. I know Misty Weaver and I think Greg Carlson set that up monthly, I think. But they're on Twitter, so.
I haven't been to the meetups either, but I definitely, I went to InfoCamp. I think it was one of the first weekends of when I first started the MLIS program, and it was just such a great experience to be suddenly surrounded, and I hadn't started the program very much, so I wasn't used to being surrounded by information people, and it was a great introduction. And you meet a lot of people, and it is just really great to be surrounded, not just by students, but also by people in field doing so many different things. So that was definitely, I'd recommend it, InfoCamp. And I've heard great things about the meetups. I haven't been myself, but very cool too.
Yes, science meetups. What's a good way to transition mentally into the professional?
I don't know that I've had as much of a transition because I still work for UW. And it still feels very academic. It is, we have professors, there are a lot of students that are still in getting their master's in public health. So it still does feel very academic in my experience. I think the biggest transition is sitting down all day. It has been really hard.
hard. I was very, very used to getting to walk around all day and sit down and be like, you know, 2 hours at a time for class, and I get to go. So I think that's been the biggest, sitting in one place and being in one physical space. And I think for me, it's been really useful to know, and it's a very personal thing, but just if I work better when I have multiple things that I can work on, and when I'm kind of stuck on something, I can move to something else. So I think knowing that about yourself, so kind of thinking about how you work well, and taking some time to really think about that, whether it's in an internship or if it's in a capstone or it's in class or whatever, I think that's a really important thing to know about yourself, so you can kind of build that into however you work professionally.
For me personally, transition has been kind of tough. I think one of the biggest differences is that when I was working on campus at the Media Center, actually with Tal, we would have like these very open-ended projects. Our boss would be like, "Oh, do this." There's no really strict deadline, but if you finish it, that's cool, you know.
That's a job.
Yeah. But then now at Amazon, it's like you have like multiple projects, always very specific deadlines, and you all learn how to manage that. For me, having not worked in a huge company like that, a little bit tough, but you know, you manage. Let's see. The work environment, it's very professional, although there's like this disconnect between how professional it is versus how everyone dresses at Amazon. It's very casual, but then everyone looks like they have some place to go. So for that, it's like, just gotta be super focused. When you think you can't work, take a tea break, coffee break, and then work some more.
Yeah, taking a walk around the block is super, super helpful.
Yeah.
For some of us second years who have been applying for jobs for a while and gotten few answers at all, let alone positive ones, how many jobs did you apply to before you landed at your final or current success?
So how many cover letters did I write?
Sure.
How many interviews did I get? This was the second interview that I got, but I think I probably wrote about 10 or 12 cover letters.
That's rare. Yeah, it took me 75. I have a spreadsheet of all that, but I have employment now, so we just have to keep going. Like Patrick, you applied 4 times. That's
so I guess I was like you, I did 15, 20 applications, got 2 interviews, including this one. So I was like totally surprised. Like, you want to talk to me? Cool,
I didn't really think
it was
real when
you talk
to me.
It's very discouraging. Like, I would get responses from, you know, places where like, you know, like your cover letter was great. You had no spelling errors. Your resume looks good too. It's just like, you just don't have the experience. And they're very upfront about that. It's like, oh, well, I'm glad I got a response from you. Thanks, you know? Thanks for rejecting me, you know? But just gotta keep trying. I know the average is about a year after you graduate. For, you know, recent graduates who find a job, so. Yeah.
Yeah, would you guys recommend if you had a year to continue to do internships and try to add to your resume? I mean, it's hard to do that. You don't need any money.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I mean, let me just briefly like, count how many internships I did in the 2 years. Of. Seven.
What?
Internships. Six. Six, one was paid. It's very discouraging, although I think that's what you gotta do. I mean, you have to work, you have to intern, anything to like pad your resume. That sucks, but and there are times when like I'm at the workstation, like at an internship, I'm there like 15 hours a week, you know, not getting paid. It's like, It's just a bummer, I'm staring at the screen, at, you know, I'm online on four classes at an internship, and then at work, it's like, I'm doing this for a reason, and, for me, it's just finding that inspiration, but besides, like, internship, I really can't do anything else.
I mean, I think there's, I was very lucky because I was working at the Applied Physics Lab, and I stayed there through the summer, because you can keep working, I was a student worker there, so I stayed there through the summer, and as I kind of, as I was finishing my degree and recognizing that, oh, it might be a while, I definitely kind of sat down with my boss and sat down on my own and sat down with my boss and was like, what are the things that I can do while I'm still here and still, doing something at least part-time that will just give me that extra little bit of, I did something else, I did something on my own, and, it just happened that the APL had, so they've been around since the World War II. So they've been around since the 40s and they did a lot of torpedo research in the 40s. And at some point someone moved a box and there was another box behind that box. And there was several boxes under that box. And they were full of these films from the 40s that no one had looked at in forever. And they were UW, it was documenting all of these torpedo research things going on in the Sound that I knew at the time that I know it or escaping me exactly. But they were a historical record for both the laboratory and the college and the Navy because the lab was started by the Navy. So I was able to talk with my boss and talk with the people at the leadership at the APL and went over to Special Collections and did a finding guide. We donated it to the Special Collections and digitized a couple of them that then ended up going to the Navy, and it was a really exciting thing. And now that finding guide is mine. And I am not going into that, but I didn't know that at the time. So it was like, yeah, I've never made a finding guide before. I will do this. I will learn something else. So I think it's really discouraging when it's like, where is this going? I can't see the path of this is going to take me somewhere. But I think it's also adding extra stuff that's new experiences and new new things, not just padding, but also like you learn something new, whatever you end up doing, if you kind of have the right, if it's yours, you can really make something of it for yourself, and I think that's what's really important. That being said, it's hard to do when you need a job to do, to live. So I think wherever you can kind of find yourself, if you can find those things that will keep you going, I think that's really
you're saying it's a marathon instead of a sprint?
This question is more for Patrick, I think, but or maybe both of you when you're applying for jobs. Deb talked about kind of like translating your skill sets. I'm curious, when you were through the job hunt, did you find that you needed to translate your MLIS degree? And if so, how did you do that?
I think I ensured that my LIS would transfer over to these non-library professions by doing my internships at really random places. I think you get a better idea of what type of information professional these companies need and what kind of skills that they require, because a lot of them, they all need catalogers or catalog specialists, but then they might want you to do something that's like kind of related. Like at KXP, one of my biggest projects was to create a new, organizational scheme for their SharePoint site. I was lucky that they gave me enough time to look up SharePoint. But content management, what is this? Working at random places at the same time taking random classes. I think INFX lives in that very great middle realm between LIS and EPSIM. And so you have a chance to take Epson classes, go for it. But then LIS also offers those great classes as well, like resource construction, catalogging. It's about taking these classes and applying them, you know, in a work environment and creating a product or finishing a project that you put on your resume and say, hey, I can apply this LIS degree. This is how I did it. That's your question.
Yeah. Actually, just a follow-up. Yeah. The people that you work with have similar job title you Amazon, do they have MLIS degrees?
Oh, yeah.
And if not, okay.
For sure. Actually, my boss got her LIS from UW as well. Okay. So they do hire from UW.
I was wondering, I know that you said you did a lot of different types of internships. Is that because you were trying to explore what you wanted to do? Because I hear about students wanting, or I hear about this being busy, concept of being busy, mm-hmm. but being strategically busy, were you guys trying to be strategically busy or just kind of test out different things, like more depth or with, does that make sense?
I think I was lucky that my internship was really my student job. It wasn't really an internship. I would have done more internships, but I was very fortunate to find the position at the Applied Physics Lab, because at the time I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do, and I wasn't really sure if I wanted to be in a specialized academic library, like at the Physics Lab, or like the Music Library, like some of the other libraries I'd worked in, or if I wanted to do something totally different. And so it was a conscious choice to say, no, I'm going to work here while I have this opportunity and kind of see where that goes. And then when it came time to look at a capstone, I wanted something totally different because I wanted to get experience doing something very different than I'm in a library, I'm checking out books, and I'm cataloging, and I'm shelving, and I'm creating different sorts of things. So when I was looking at the list of different organizations to work with for Capstone, the digital library really jumped out at me, and I said, ooh, that one, I think that could be really interesting. And when I ended up talking with the company that was building the library, it felt really right, and it felt like things that I had, that right mix of, I know kind of the theory behind this, and I haven't done it yet, but I've done pieces of it, but I really want to do more of this. So it was a really great time to be able to say, I haven't done this yet, but I can. I know I can. I know I have it back here, and I know I have people that I can talk to that can help me. So that was a very strategic sort of pushing myself in that direction, too.
Yeah.
I think that's a good.
I definitely went for the width, as opposed to the depth. Although, if you know what you do, go for it. Don't waver, just do it. I think it's just like figuring out what does an information professional mean? Like, what do we do exactly?
And figuring out what that means to you. That's the same thing, like when you're translating kind of what does the MLIS degree bring to X company? Really, well, what do I know that I can do that I will bring? And what are those things? So, like, we're both information professionals, but we both do use it in different ways. But we use a lot of the same stuff, but in very different ways. And some different stuff that, you know, I think it's a lot about figuring out what that is on a personal level for yourself, and then looking. Like when I was looking, I was like, I like indexing, I like cataloging, what are these jobs? And then I just started throwing in like information and data and, you know, staying away from library more or less because I didn't think that was where a job might show up or how it would be described. So there was, you know, putting together all of those keywords and hoping in some combination it would come up with something. And I think it works, but it is a tenacity, so you have to stick with it.
mingle and finish up beverages or whatever you want to do.